B-Pod Studios.
Yes! Hello, my broken brigade! 'Tis your great leader, Broken Matt Hardy! And you are currently listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with two wonderful blokes, James Stewart and Mike Riley. Yes! Let's get into it and listen to the Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast!
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports, including Over Under 985. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Joe Murray is our third man in, along with Mike Riley. I want to open with this opinion. I think Seth Rollins failed as WWE's top draw. I can't speak for his merchandise sales. It doesn't help that in defending his brand, his WWE sports entertainment brand, that he keeps making himself or the WWE look bad. And it seems that he really hasn't been a box office draw, because he hasn't. And I've got some numbers to support that in a second. But I guess at some point we have to stop blaming creative and start blaming the talent. Our friends over at the New Age Insiders, week after week after week on their podcast, keep telling me that this is the best talent roster in the history of WWE. If this roster is so good and it's so talented, why is it drawing? It's the circus. The job is to draw people to the building. It's to draw eyes and ears on the product. Why is the most talented roster in the history of WWE not doing it? Each week, Seth Rollins gets a microphone, gets a match. Take a chance, Seth. Maybe it'll work. Listen to the crowd. And Seth is a veteran. He's worked so many places. He should, you know how to get over and adjust. You know, somebody who has been in WWE for a long time and hasn't always loved his creative? Daniel Bryan. You know what he did? He pushed, he advocated for himself. When he got his first world championship, he started something that got a buzz. That was the Yes Movement. He was beaten in 18 seconds at WrestleMania in Miami. It got him more over. And so did those silly spots with Kane. He made those work. And he won the championship in New Orleans because of it, with the Yes Movement. And then the more recent run, where Bryan felt the Yes Movement was failing, he pushed to be different. And by the way, it took a while for him to get there, but he got there. And now we have eco-friendly Daniel Bryan. On top of that, Seth Rollins seems to have hurt Becky Lynch. I mean, Becky's still selling merchandise, and the fact that WWE oversold those WrestleMania New York plaques is an indication that she's still drawing merch. But the man's man seems to be pulling her down. Before I get to the numbers, Mike, Joe, hi.
Yeah, good evening.
I didn't know we were cutting promos today, Jimmy Stewart.
Apparently people liked Angry James from last week, so why not give him more?
The numbers indicate that.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, somebody called out AEW last week.
I'm drawing better than Seth Rollins.
You're welcome for giving you the layup of 2019 there on the slam dunk.
Why? You didn't know it was coming. I didn't know I could dunk like that.
Yeah, I know. Well, you're a tall dude, but yes, I just thought it was a very overrated match, the Cody Rhodes, the overachieved.
The main event of
match.
AEW. But yeah, to my point on Seth Rollins, has he failed as Raw's flag waver, Raw's banner champion? Has he failed?
Well, you know, here's the thing. He has not lived up to the expectation, and to yes or no answer, to answer it politely and as briefly as possible, yes, he has. But I don't think the plan was, you know, for Seth Rollins to have been the Universal Champion. We know the health situation of Roman Reigns, and it probably would have been another rematch there, WrestleMania Roman and Brock Lesnar. But then, of course, going into that, they put the title around Seth Rollins leading into that, or excuse me, yeah, Brock Lesnar and then Seth Rollins chasing after him. So I think that was like the only scenario where they thought, okay, this is the guy that could potentially take down Brock and let's give him the fair shot. And it just really, again, I'm with you, Jimmy. He has not panned out. No interest in him. Does not look, he's not a universal champion. Seth Rollins would be a great intercontinental champion. He'd be a great United States champion. He is not of the United Universal Championship category, in my opinion. I don't think he's in the WWE Championship category, in my opinion. He's a mid-tier champion, and he just doesn't, I don't see that connection really with the fans. I know some people love him, and I'm sure he, you know, he's definitely earned his stripes to be there, but he doesn't fit the mode there for a universal champion or a heavyweight champ.
Joe?
So I actually disagree with all that. I think that the guy's well established, going back to his NXT days, to the Shield getting over, to him being a part of the Authority with Triple H. All they've done time after time is try to push him, and he succeeds. Right? He's the Kingslayer. He's the Beast Slayer. And if you really want to look into it, they had the reunion show, which I'm sure we'll get into, but that bit was supposed to be for Ricochet, and WWE went with Seth Rollins. So if you continue to look at it, they're giving him the push. And you know what? He answers. The problem is, he made a comment this week that I thought was interesting. He speaking to Yahoo Sports, he was talking about how WWE is the New York Yankees. They're the New England Patriots. Everybody hates them. That's fine. It makes perfect sense. It's always how sports entertainment should be. You should always hate the big guy. It's fine. I'm not upset. I think that's one of the issues. He's not a big guy, right? He's one of these new-aged star wrestler, the AJ style, the Daniel Bryan. And to your point, Jay Stu, is that Daniel Bryan has made a name for it. Seth Rollins has just answered the bell every single time. It's gotten over at times. The burn it down, the Seth freaking Rollins, the Monday Night Rollins. It is all there. Yeah. Everything is there. The guy's done. He's answered the bell. He's been given the opportunities. He's run with it. The problem is he's not the guy. That's the issue. WWE is always trying to find the next guy. He's definitely at the top. Some guys have it. Hey, I think Roman has it. The problem is he can't get over either. And, you know, you saw John Cena for a glimpse last night. For a glimpse. You saw Stone Cold Steve Austin come in. When's the last time he's done that? Those guys have it. They're themselves. And I just think that that's the issue with WWE. And maybe we got a taste of it tonight in SmackDown when it came to some great promos tonight. The triple, the HBK, Dolph Ziggler. I've been waiting for you're a knockoff HBK for years. And I've been waiting for Randy Orton to say, I don't, you know, I deserve to be here because I'm Randy Orton. Like that kind of storyline and that kind of it factor is what gets those guys over. Seth Rollins just doesn't have it.
There was a lot of more reality-based promos on SmackDown, which we want to credit to Eric Bischoff, but of course Vince McMahon has the final say in all of that. I want to stay on Seth Rollins, though. Twitter user at NWO Wolfpack TV, yes, that's all one word and that's still a thing, he collected data from domestic house shows during Rollins' reign in order to compare them to other former world champions. Shows that took place during his run drew approximately 53,350 fans over 16 events, coming in at an average of 3,304 fans, a dismal number and somehow worse than the Jinder Mahal WWE title reign, which with that average on a weaker brand, mind you, sat at 3,497 fans per show. So I have the list, and it's an interesting list of low-drawing WWE champions, or in this case, Universal, the big belt, as we say. Or one of the big belts, one of the two big belts.
Strawberry Daiquiri belt.
The Finn Balor belt, because, of course, it was designed for him. But the overall reason I bring this up is that despite his pop for being Brock Lesnar, and a lot of things that you say, Joe, is I still think Seth Rollins is failing as Raw's top draw. And it might be because they were a year late in making him the top guy, or there's something that didn't draw people in. And speaking of, you know, Seth Rollins' first run that you mentioned drew pretty well. But you know who drew better? Dean Ambrose or John Moxley. So transitioning a little bit to another comment made by Seth Rollins on the SummerSlam conference call. He said, quote, "I was surprised by it," referring to Ambrose Moxley leaving. "I knew Ambrose needed time away from WWE. Now he's competition and trying to take dinner off my table, and good on him." Seth, if I may call you Seth, John Moxley is not taking food off your table. In fact, John Moxley and competing brands are adding food to your table and other WWE superstars. More on John Moxley later. But the fact is that Seth Rollins isn't doing himself any favors. Not only is he drawing low, he's making bad comments.
Yep. And that's, I know they encourage the Twitter stuff, and you know, we did see him say a few things the last couple of weeks.
Check out my paycheck, Will Ospreay. Are people taking food off his table, or are you making more money? I'm confused.
Right. You know what? I think would benefit Seth Rollins like more respectable to everybody, and maybe get a little more. I don't know. I just think it would be a better chase. And I know they're talking about how, you know, he did, he was able to defeat Brock Lesnar and so forth. But I think that they're going to have to build up the fact that he came back from the surgery, the ACL, which he had to surrender and so forth. You know, talk about that. That is a real life situation. How hard he fought back to get to where he was, because he's going to need to gain back everybody. I know they did that the first time around. I'm sure when he did come back after the ACL, he didn't really get too much of a push there for a championship, but they're going to have to bring that back to get the respect that he is going to need as a babyface to be the top dog. But for him to make comments outside of the ring like this in a real-life scenario with the Will Ospreay stuff like that, Jimmy, does not help his cause, and that just absolutely kills the respect factor for him as a potential champ.
I'll just throw in the fact that I think the rich got richer, and I guess the hungry got fat in the scenario of Seth Rollins. So I'm trying to use an analogy on it, guys, but he's been, again, he's been given
everything.
Pigs
get fat, hogs get slaughtered, I believe is the analogy you're looking for. Except Seth Rollins, I don't think is going to get slaughtered.
Yep, no. I don't think he will either, but I think what happened was the Becky thing happened, and all of a sudden it's like, all right, these two guys, like, come on. Because you know what? The stink has hurt her a little bit, and we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens with her going forward. I think everyone is still high on her. It's just, just like we get too much in life, maybe we've just gotten a little bit too much Seth Rollins, and the social media aspect does not help whatsoever. So,
but I don't think Seth has done social media well, even though he's trying to stick up for his brand. Like Becky Lynch has crushed her social media. She's done such a great job with everything that she's done.
She trolls people too in a funny way.
Of course she does. That doesn't work for me, brother, in a response to a Hulk Hogan tweet. Tremendous stuff. It'll be interesting to see, and this is something we'll talk about in a future episode, if Becky and Natty are the main event of SummerSlam, because it is Natty's home country. But I don't want to linger too much. I've talked a lot.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Open it up. Mike, the last week or so of wrestling since we last spoke, what has jumped out at you? What's your lead takeaway in the wrestling world right now?
Well, it was going to be the Raw reunion going into the show, but our conversation before we hit record, I'm going to change gears here and go on Kevin Owens. And sure, I think he's done he's one of the most talented guys in the microphone of this generation and in ring too. And I do like how he's gone with the stunner, and he's used that to his advantage, and he's, you know, really marketing himself there. But I don't like Kevin Owens as a face. I think he's better as a heel. And yes, it just seems like that the turn will happen at some point. Hey, it could even happen at SummerSlam against Shane McMahon, because sure, we saw it happen with Stone Cold Steve Austin, WrestleMania 17, in his home state of Texas, where that was maybe one of the biggest turns ever behind Hogan and the NWO one right there. I could totally see that happening in his home country of Canada. Shorter, but it could happen. Joe, what are you about to remember?
I was just going to say, I mean, everything you're saying right now, just it's a storyline, Mike. It's going to start here. Everyone's going to get behind him.
Well,
him and Roman. And then what's going to happen at SummerSlam? He'll probably lose, and he'll probably join Shane McMahon.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. So I just don't like it as the face. I think he's better as a heel, and I cannot wait for that moment for when Kevin Owens does turn heel and screws someone over, and then he becomes the guy to root against. He's better as a bad guy.
I do want to add, though, I do think when he is a face, he's someone you can rally around, like a Mick Foley type, you know? Yeah. It's completely different characters, but he's like the common man, right? Not really built, kind of a little husky, athletic, very talented, good on the mic. Like
Dusty Rhodes.
He has the skills, but you're right. I'm sure you have a take, Jimmy, on this as well. But I just quickly want to just tease something quickly. Everyone loves heels, right? Everyone just is eating up heels. And I just think WWE is doing something when it comes to heels. I'll get to that in a little bit.
They got a lot of them.
So I disagree. And here's why I don't think Kevin Owens is going to turn anytime soon. On the Lillian Garcia podcast 2 weeks ago, his goal is to be a top babyface, to be a top good guy. And I think you're seeing this, and I think you're going to see this for a little while, because I think creatively he was kind of pigeonholed or bored or something. There was something there creatively. And now he wants to be the champion. He wants to be the main event guy on the good side of things instead of the evil side of things. And what I like about, I prefer Kevin Owens as a bad guy, but what I like about Kevin right now is he's aggressive. Mm. He's an aggressive good guy. And that I think is why he's got a better chance of being the top guy on the SmackDown brand when they launch on Fox.
Okay, I can understand that, but do you think that's his actual, he has that much power to maintain that baby face or face scenario? Like I'm saying, I think that could be overruled.
Well, with Shane McMahon's involved, right?
So you have a program with a McMahon, so that's a good thing. That's like being in the WWE title picture. Mm. So it'll have the support. And from what I understand, since Vince McMahon told Kevin Owens his match in Orlando was terrible, he's gotten more support about having better programs, better stories, generally speaking.
And the McMahons apparently do like Kevin Owens. Obviously, here he's working with Shane McMahon, and Vince let him punch him in the face.
Give him a headbutt.
Excuse me, headbutt, SmackDown, yeah. With the blood. With the blood.
That was after Shane McMahon, or it was before Shane McMahon, Hell in a Cell, but absolutely.
Yeah, another Hell in a Cell. There you go. So they like Kevin Owens.
Guys, if I may, I wanted to...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
just get this take off my chest quickly?
Please do, Joe. We love takes, especially if they're negative.
I guess feel like we're all just cutting promos, and I figured I'd get right into it. But for those who are caught up on Wrestling of the Week, you watch Samoa Joe get squashed in back-to-back nights, get the stunner as well, a guy that should be at the top of the card. And we talk heels. He's one of the best promos, and I'll tell you this much. The guy brings it in the ring, right? I mean, the guy can flat out, he can fight. He's got some of the best jabs I've ever seen in wrestling. You talk about good chops, like you think Undertaker. Even Kane has great chops, but you might have to put that little punch that Samoa Joe is into the mix there. But I just wanted to bring him up and Drew McIntyre, right? Drew McIntyre is losing to a 205 Live guy who is a janitor in a terrible segment. Like, this was one of the guys that was always, always supposed to be considered the next one. The next one. And he's had a great reign. I think he's had a really good reign, but why Dolph? And now all of a sudden, why Shane here? And, you know, he's a special guest referee on a SmackDown. Like, just to me, Samoa Joe and Drew McIntyre, these are two guys. And I'll even throw The Miz in there. These, you know, the Miz always gets that title run or always gets that big match, but he always performs when he steps up. Those guys do as well. Miz has been there before and gets the opportunities, but why not Samoa Joe? Why not Drew McIntyre? Don't give me the other promotions because AJ Styles done it and other guys as well. Just what is it with those two guys not getting that opportunity? And I think they could be great heels. And we've seen Samoa Joe as a champion. Drew McIntyre, I don't know what – that guy's got it, yet we haven't yet – he's yet to get the opportunity.
Just a note on Miz – and why I've been an advocate of him being the WWE champion, 17th best drawing WWE champion, according to the Twitter numbers that whoever it is, I lost the guy's name. It doesn't matter. He did all the work, and I'm going to take most of the credit for it. Yeah. Doesn't matter. Don't want to give credit to him. He's already got enough credit.
But what is it, guys, right? Like it's okay to say you don't like the guy, but what is it that holds them back? I mean, hey, I guess I should say they're at the top of the card, right? So that's at least good.
What holds who back? The talent, Joe? Is that what you're specifically saying?
I think the push.
The push is in it. It's connecting with fans, and it's taking the TV time that you have and taking a chance. I think that's what it is, and fighting for who you are and what you believe in as best you can.
Is Samoa Joe being punished, though?
No, I don't think he's being punished. I think he's a villain, and he's being used to try and get the good guys over more. And it hasn't hurt him at all because the crowd still chants Joe, Joe, Joe when he comes out.
Right. They love it.
And I was going to say, he's a pro. Like, the guy's a pro. He goes out there, does his job. And, you know, that I think that's what's happening in WWE right now. These guys want opportunities, want the push. They're not getting it. To me, I'd like to see a little bit more of that. We saw a promo tonight of Ali, right? Another guy who's trying to make that push. My whole thing is this. There are guys there that are deserving. You know, we just talked about everything that Seth Rollins has done. But what do these guys have not done besides sell and sell and sell and sell out? And these are guys that Samoa Joe's been at the top of the card. Like, he's been a great heel. Like, the whole Mysterio angle, dumb. Like, I the more I look at it, him fighting Roman, great. That was great.
It was just wasted on a Monday Night Raw. That should be a pay-per-view main event or semi-main event.
And you can get that a good two or three pay-per-views out of those two guys together. You totally could. You know, you could get them maybe at a SummerSlam and then whatever the September one is, and then into October. You could very easily work into that. And that may be the guy to, you know, help. I mean, I'm not saying that Samoa Joe isn't over, but you have Roman Reigns right there with Samoa Joe. That may be the one to put him over the top to get him into that championship category that he deserves.
Just to clean this up quickly, you mentioned Jinder Mahal had a great run. What was he? He was a heel, right?
Yep, 100%.
Why can't WWE go with a heel as their main star?
I think because they are finish the point, Joe. I'm sorry.
Who was the last one?
The last heel? Brock Lesnar.
Daniel Bryan. Eco-friendly Daniel Bryan had a good run.
And they delayed the belts there, and they have them all made. Now he doesn't even have the belt out anymore, for crying out loud. You should put him as a champion again.
But Brock Lesnar wasn't doing live events, right. So it's hard to – Brock Lesnar is more for business advertisers than anything else. which is where WWE is trending anyway.
We might be in a day where Brock's probably a good call. But at times, you know, the people will favor him when it's him versus Roman, you know?
Of course.
So, I mean, all I'm saying is, if it hasn't worked yet, try it. See what happens with it.
Well, maybe it's the villain Seth Rollins. Maybe that's the answer.
Or you could go the villain AJ Styles.
Or
the villain your boy Kevin Owens.
Or here's a name for you, because you know, this guy drew pretty well when he was the WWE champion, Bray Wyatt. And that is something that they did well on the Raw reunion show. They established Bray Wyatt has another finisher, and that's Mick Foley's mandible claw.
And I think that was the only good thing to put over, in terms of putting over talent, the way they did on the Raw reunion, what Mick Foley did there for Bray Wyatt, the way he put over the new character of Bray Wyatt. Everything else, I just had it as a blast in the past, and like, you know, for my childhood and all that. It was really cool to see everybody, not taking that away, but I think that was the only thing that really helped propel the present roster. And also, if I were the WWE production or anyone higher up in the executive office, I would have had that in the fall. I would not have had that now, 2 weeks up before SummerSlam. You do that on a Monday night in the fall when you're going up against the NFL. So they wasted it.
Well, I wonder if they wanted Bray Wyatt versus Finn Balor, because Finn Balor supposedly last show is going to be SummerSlam for a little bit.
Yeah, and will it be the Demon? I think that'd be something. Would they waste the Demon versus the Fiend and then have him go away for a bit? I'm curious to see that.
Well, people forget that the Demon has already lost a match, and that was against Samoa Joe.
Oh, Samoa Joe, huh?
Yeah, interesting. Interesting how that works. See how I brought that all the way back to your point, Joe? Hey, there's no bigger Samoa Joe fan than I am. I love the guy. I think he's tremendous talent, should be main eventer. He's what Kevin Owens promotes as a prize fighter. That's what Samoa Joe is.
Just getting back to Bray Wyatt, guys, I actually have loved the promos. I know they're weird.
Absolutely.
I'm in on them now. I used to cringe, but I am in on them.
But I like how today you saw the Bray Wyatt angle of it, the Fiend angle of it. Don't bring him out. You know, we want to invite. Like, I just think it all really tied itself together with these last two, you know, lights go out and those type of moves. So I actually hope this thing really gets over.
I do, too. I would tend to agree.
They're investing in him. Yeah. At first, it was a cringe. It was like, what the hell is this? Took a little bit, but now you see like kind of two sides of him. I know I made the reference of a glorified Doink the Clown initially, but I think this has a lot of legs. So here we go.
I want to transition a little bit to the Jon Moxley thing. And the reason why is there are people out there that claim that the WWE system is the best system ever. 251 employees, greatest talent roster ever. Best system ever. Nobody's done it better. Nobody's done it longer. We get that, right? Jon Moxley is having a hell of a run right now as a pro wrestler. And Moxley, Ambrose has had more memorable matches in the last 8 weeks or so since he left WWE. The problem, of course, is that it doesn't have the WWE monster behind it. It's, you know, in my case, I subscribe to New Japan World. We all watch AEW now because it's easily accessible. But it makes me question how good the WWE system actually is these days. The generational history means that people watch it. It should be a factory. But from the TV business point, money is coming in from the TV, but the live events and the merch sales are way down. But to Moxley specifically, his match with Ishii, July 19th, G1 main event, fabulous, fabulous brawl when they were outside the ring. But when they are inside the ring, good counters, good moves, good holds, just tremendous work. There was a sequence in there with aggressive headbutts back and forth. Ishii countering the Death Rider double arm DDT until Moxley hit a snap DDT. Ishii kicked out at about the 20-minute mark of the 30-minute time limit. Moxley pulled down his knee pads, hit that regal knee right to the head, and then he finally got the full impact of the Death Rider DDT on Ishii. Double scoop the legs for the three count. Good, good stuff. Told a story. A story. Was given the time to tell the in-ring story. Jon Moxley having a hell of a run right now. New Japan and AEW.
He's going to win, Jimmy. I told you he is going to win this tournament. He is the only one that is undefeated in the G1 tournament.
In his block, Mike.
Thank you.
In his blocks.
Yep, you're right.
But I believe Kenta and four. Okada are also unbeaten in their blocks.
They have four wins, but he's the only one with six. All right. So I thought the match against Ishii was fantastic. In fact, I mean, I can't think of another. It may have been the best John Moxley slash Dean Ambrose match I've seen ever in his career. Steel chairs, you know, high maneuvers. And I love what he was doing. I love his style there. I love how he's got that UFC fighter attire. And just really, you can tell how invested he is, not in the character so much, but definitely in the ring too. It's a new phase in his career, and he's just so into it, and he wants to win this tournament. And I really still believe he will win the tournament to make himself a name in New Japan.
Just a quick correction, Mike. Okada has four wins. Kenta has four wins in the A block, 8 points total. Moxley, three wins in the B block, 6 points total. All four that I mentioned are leading their respective blocks.
So that's where I got the six confused. So thank you.
No worries.
Yeah, guys, just wanted to mention Moxley quickly. I love the pop. The pop was there at that first AEW event. It was huge. It shocked the wrestling world. And it carried on, right? I mean, it carried on into his next match. So here's what excites me. I know you guys just kind of set up everything, what you've been watching. He's doing an event called Bloodsport. Not sure if you guys have heard of this.
Yeah. Josh Barrett, who's the commentator for Access TV's New Japan programming. He worked with Jim Ross for a long time.
Yeah, he fought in the UFC, so he was like a heavyweight champion in the
Still trains people. Still trains people,
there
too.
There you go. So they're going to fight each other at Bloodsport 2. It's going to be the second Saturday night of the NFL week. So you'll have opening week in the NFL, and then week two, that Saturday night, is going to be this event. But it features all sorts of like hybrid pro wrestling, MMA, and Jonny Moxley is going to be involved in that. So like that's going to bring in Edge and a half. Like this is turning into Bloodsport, right? Or Hulk Hogan when he was Thunder Lips, or things to that degree. So he can do this kind of stuff, right? Does he have that Conor McGregor swag? I think he does. And I just think he can do these type of things, but also is a real technical guy in the ring.
And that's why I've mentioned this before, I love the wrestling shoes. The wrestling shoes are it's like that extra little detail that I just love. Yeah. I just love that.
Just finishing touch on that, I do think AEW has slipped since that pop. Like, that pop was so big. Can they top that? That's what I'm going to be watching for.
I agree, and they're trying with the ladder match with the Young Bucks and the Lucha Brothers. They just announced that today amongst a few other matches.
Yawn.
Oh, Joe's out on that, huh?
Yawn. They've done nothing for me.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't
a shoot.
Joe, continue that thought, please.
No, it's not a shoot. Just I've heard so much about the Young Bucks. Give me the old Hardys instead of those guys.
Thank you, Joe.
No, it's just that you keep hearing about them, right? You hear about these the revival, right? I watch them. They're technical. They're grand, whatever. They don't jump out to me as this great tag team. They just don't. And maybe we'll get into that later on in the show. But for the most part, though, like the Young Bucks, everybody come see the Young Bucks. I watch and I'm like,
Joe, do you know Mike Riley's favorite match he's ever seen live?
What's that?
It's a Ring of Honor match involving the Young Bucks.
Yeah, but
was it because it was their last match ever, maybe, and they actually cared?
No, it's funny you said that, Jimmy. I was thinking about that the other day, and more I thought about it, I totally forgot the NXT LOL show where Samoa Joe beat Finn Balor. That would probably top it just by an edge. But both in LOL, both right there in the same arena.
See, Mike secretly loves the Young Bucks, and I appreciate that, even though he's called them overrated. He's like trying to play both sides of it.
I'm not shooting on them. They really, as just
yeah,
a.
No,
it's no like, Joe, I'm not, it's promo
I'm
night.
I'm a pro wrestling fan. Just give me more. They're the Jacksons. That's what I know about them. I couldn't Jackson? Even tell you. I don't even know their finishing move.
Super like, kicks. Meltzer driver.
Great. Yawn. Like, if AEW is going to really bring the tag teams, then
Joe,
can you give me a tag team?
Stop with the yawn and just say it. Vomit. Go ahead.
Vomit. Also,
good job. Good job, Joe.
Out.
So the Young Bucks actually did an interview with Chris Van Vliet. I don't know who that is.
And Jimmy, they might pick this up and be like, oh, fat guy in Boston shoots on us. I've watched four of your matches because I've heard all about you and you've done nothing for me. This is, I'm not shooting on you. I've heard great things. I just, can I see a little bit more, please? Thanks.
Do you want me to put that as the headline? Fat guy in Boston shoots on Young Bucks.
And he is not wearing a little coat right now.
30 pound lighter Joe Murray shoots on Young Bucks.
I didn't mean that whatsoever. Sorry, Mr. Jackson's, okay? Sorry, Mr. Jackson's. I'm for real, okay?
No, don't apologize. Please don't apologize.
This is 2 weeks in a row here going after AEW. I got to come up with something for next week then. Really attack him.
Well, I have concerns about AEW.
Week-to-week
television is tough.
Here's the thing.
And keep this in mind, too, guys, when we're talking about AEW doing week-to-week, WWE isn't doing great numbers on Tuesday nights, and they're moving to Friday nights. So, like, if AEW expects to do 5,000 live fans, WWE and specifically Kofi on this championship run are doing less than 3,000 fans for SmackDown tapings. How easy was it to get a ticket to Worcester a few weeks ago? And Manchester? It was so easy to get into. So suddenly this company that has a lot of internet buzz and a lot of people who will travel to the big shows is all of a sudden going to do week-to-week TV and draw 5,000 people? That seems like a tall task, and especially when you're going to be going against other pro sports.
You know, and that's – here's the thing, too, with the AEW, just back to Joe's point and for what you're saying, too, Jimmy. I think we saw so much good out of the Double or Nothing pay-per-view. It was great. In fact, I think a lot of people have said that it is on par to be pay-per-view of the year right now.
I think so.
Yeah. Fyter Fest, okay. Not as good. I think we can all agree there.
Didn't sell out, or if it did, it was a walk-up sellout that nobody talked about.
Yep. But again, but maybe they didn't. In my mindset was, all right, they're holding back a little bit because you didn't have all the stars there in that one. And then two, it was free. It was a free pay-per-view. Bleacher Report had to deal with it. So they probably weren't giving you everything. They're saving a little bit. And again, for Fyter Fest, 2 weeks after. So it's not like it was a couple of months after, a month and a half. You didn't have a lot of time in between here. So maybe AEW is saving the – I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt here. I really am.
Oh, they are. They're making you pay for it. They're making the pay-per-views awesome, and they'll try to do the best they can for the other TV.
So that's guys, just as a casual fan.
I'm not going to rip the Young Bucks 100%, but I'm with you, Joe.
You said they were overrated in your favorite match.
I'm a casual Ring of Honor, New Japan. Like, I'll watch it when it's on. I don't follow religiously. But I do think it's confusing at times. What's AEW? What's New Japan? Ring of Honor? I get confused sometimes when I'm scrolling the internet.
Hey, it's a confusing process. And if we had a sponsor for a certain app, I'd tell you more about it. But they're not a sponsor, so I can't.
but just as we all love pro wrestling. Just I get confused sometimes.
I love sports entertainment. We do sports entertainment. Yay, sports entertainment. No, you're a pro wrestling company. You're carnies. You're all carnies. It's okay. Speaking of the Young Bucks and tag teams, I texted you this very simple question. Give me your personal three favorite tag teams. I'll start. Heart Foundation, Midnight Express, Hardy Boys.
Okay.
Any reasoning, please?
Yes. The Heart Foundation, I've always been a Bret Hart guy. The first poster on my wall was Bret Hart with the Intercontinental Championship. And I just thought that Bret's in-ring work was so sound. The Anvil was just a powerhouse in there. And I thought that their promos made sense. They were to the point. They were main eventing against the British Bulldogs, against Demolition, Strike Force. Just good quality matches. And that's why they are my number one favorite team. The Midnight Express as second. And I'm talking about the Stan Lane, Beautiful Bobby version. Just go through the pay-per-views in 1989 and 1990. Wrestle War. It was them against the Rock and Roll Express. That year's Great American Bash, the night that Sting won the world title from Ric Flair. That match with the Southern Boys. Quality tag team wrestling. They had a good program with Tom Zink and Brian Pillman. Just quality, just good, solid tag team work. And the Hardy Boys. Huge fan of Matt Hardy. More of a fan of Matt Hardy as the days and weeks go by with his creative stuff and how he's changed from here to there. He's just changed his character all the way through. And they're still at the top of the tag team. One of my favorite WrestleMania moments ever was being in Orlando for them coming out and winning the tag titles in a ladder match.
Mm-hmm.
Good enough reasoning for you, Joe?
Good. Mike, go ahead. I'm going to save mine.
Last. Okay.
All right. So
did my reasoning satisfy you, Joe?
Yes.
Excellent. Love it. Absolutely. Go.
It satisfied me too, James.
Thank you.
Heart Foundation, I had them as a top five favorite of mine, but they're not top three. So number three for me, I went with the New Age Outlaws. And the reason why for them, I just really have I respect how, you know, you had two guys who had a, you know, obviously Road Dogg, he tried to have that singles career as the roadie, and then he was teamed up with Jeff Jarrett, didn't work well. Billy Gunn with the Smoking Guns, pretty successful mid-90s. They were a fan favorite, but they just totally had a rebirth with the D-Generation X, you know, the stable there. And I thought the match, the dumpster match with Cactus Jack and Terry Funk, Chainsaw Charlie, WrestleMania 14, was good. They did lose it, but they won them back the night after, which was the official formation of the new DX. And what they did there in that stable, they were pretty successful tag team championship run for a while. Sure, I don't think they had that many memorable matches that people can think of off the top of their head, but I think for what they were able to do, hold on to it at such a prestigious time in the Attitude Era, that's why they're my third favorite tag team. My second favorite tag team, the Hardy Boys. Jimmy, much like you, for what they were able to do, that pop at WrestleMania 33 was awesome. One of my favorite matches of all time was WrestleMania 2000, triple threat ladder match, the tag team, the Dudley Boys, the Hardy Boys, and Edge and Christian. And even though Edge and Christian won, the Swanton Bomb that Jeff Hardy had there on Bubba Dudley was unbelievable. An underrated match was the Royal Rumble 2000 against the Dudley Boys, a table match, very underappreciated, go watch it. And also the No Mercy ladder match against Edge and Christian for the rights to have Terry Runnels as their manager. Watch that too, Hardy Boys. And I waited in the rain for 5 hours on Saturday, September 2nd, 2000, the same day as a WWF house show at the then Fleet Center, to meet the Hardy Boys at Sports World in Everett. And I got my picture on a Polaroid with Jeff and Matt, me and my brother. They signed it, still have it to this day. Meant the world for me to be my favorite tag team at that time like that. My number one favorite tag team, the Legion of Doom. And I know a lot of people are going to say the Road Warriors, but I knew them as the Legion of Doom. And I'll be real quick on this, but one of my favorite matches of all time, WrestleMania 13, the Chicago Street Fight match. They were with Ahmed Johnson going up against the Nation of Domination. Just a hardcore match. Yeah, it was a mess and a half, but I was loved it. I thought it was great. I was at WrestleMania 14. The pop that they got for the LOD 2000 was great, that mystery tag team there. SummerSlam 92, opening match coming down on the motorcycles against Money Inc. And their match against the Nasty Boys at SummerSlam 91, I think the greatest pay-per-view of all time, was very good. And their first ever WrestleMania win against Power and Glory at WrestleMania 7. That's why I think, one, they're the greatest tag team of all time, but two, they are my favorite tag team of all time, Legion of Doom.
All right, you guys pretty much hit on all mine. I'll just go with one that you guys didn't mention. I was really big on Edge and Christian. You know, lifelong best friends from what, Canada. They were great. You know, all the, you know, the five second poses. You know, everything that they did was really good. I think Edge became one of the better wrestlers of his time, and Christian had a good run. I know he's somewhat more of a sidekick, but just, you know, say what you want, they were entertaining when maybe times weren't as entertaining in the ring.
But yeah, I agree with you guys. Legion of Doom, Hardy Boy. So I'm just going to go off the radar a little bit because you mentioned most of them. Give me the natural disasters, okay? Earthquake and Typhoon. Say whatever you want. Two big guys, and somehow they were both very athletic. And let's not forget Earthquake's run, chasing for a championship. But yeah, they were one of my favorites. And you know what? I'm going to stick with the fat guy theme. The Nasty Boys, right? Knobs and Sags, those guys knew each other very well. Them in the Hart Foundation. I think Jimmy Hart might have even been with them at one point. He's been with everybody.
Yep, that's true. Jimmy Hart's the reason why the Nasty Boys won the titles at WrestleMania 7, the helmet and everything.
There you go.
So and then he ultimately turned on them at some point because Jimmy Hart, of course, as we know, turns on all of his tag teams.
Yep. But just give me the fat guys. Give me the fat guys.
I want to do an honorable mention of the Steiner Brothers. They were on the border of they are my number four favorite tag team.
So I had them on there, Jimmy.
Yeah,
I'm curious why you took them off, and I think for me it was I'm thinking more solo than maybe tag team.
So I love the Steiner Brothers. Growing up, I thought they were innovative. I think I took them off because I just liked the three that I mentioned before a little bit better, and being so far removed from when I was really into the Steiner Brothers. Like growing up, it was Steiners and Freebirds, great match. Steiners and Midnight Express, great match. There's Steiners versus Doc and Gordy, great match. There's a match from, I think it was a Wrestle War, where they were taking on two Japanese guys and they just beat the tar out of each other, all four guys. And I can't remember their names. I will find it and I will put it on Twitter. But it is 20 minutes of them in an IWGP championship match against two stars who made the flight over, and they just beat the tar out of each other.
Was like, it Muto and Sasaki?
I don't think it was them because that was the one from the Clash of Champions, I think.
Okay.
That's Fujinama? Not the one. It might have been Fujinami.
Lizuka? That's it. Lizuka.
It might have been them.
Takayuki, Lizuka, and Fujinami. But
it's Jim Ross and Jesse Ventura, I think, on commentary, and they are just beating the hell out of each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's as close to a real wrestling match as you'll ever see.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is that, you know, the young guys starting out, Varsity Jackets, Michigan, Big Brothers, the Bulldog, like that was good. And, you know, all the guys that you mentioned besides D-Generation X, Hardy Boys, et cetera, all those guys were NWA guys, WCW guys,
yep.
WWE, wherever they went, they got over as top tag teams.
And maybe because the Steiners didn't get over as big as they should have in WWF, maybe I hold that against them a little bit.
But they beat the Head Shrinkers, I think.
Yeah, was WrestleMania 9, and they didn't make it to 10.
Yeah, and exactly. That's the thing, because during that time, that was when the company was down. And you know, it was the steroid era with Vince McMahon possibly going to prison. 93 at Survivor Series in Boston, there were the main event there with Lex Luger and The Undertaker. And again, that was considered one of the worst pay-per-views of all time by many. But still, you know, it was just a down time where it was very hard to get them over like that. So I think they were in there at the wrong time where they, again, Jimmy, as you said, they're at WrestleMania 9, but they didn't make it to 10.
Right.
So you should try to make it to 2 in a row if you can, and that never happened.
Right. And they had a rather, their WWE run just was disappointing they had a tag title match against the Heavenly Bodies, if memory serves correctly, in their home state. It wasn't really a featured contest. They were in the main event at Survivor Series teaming with Luger and The Undertaker, and I don't remember anything that stood out from that. And then in the Rumble, I think that year they were like 1-3, and I think there was a Head Shrinker at 2, which they dumped out, and then they just kind of looked at each other for 30 seconds and didn't want to do anything from there. And I think they were probably doomed from there because they didn't want to fight each other at the time, which, you know, as if memory serves, Dusty Rhodes wanted to make Scott Steiner the world champion, and Scott said, well, what happens to my brother? And Dusty's like, well, your brother's probably going to get fired. And Scott Steiner passed up the opportunity. This would have been 91. I think Flair had just beaten Sting to regain the title that he'd lost at the Great American Bash. I'm rambling. I'm sorry.
No, but well, he ended up having a singles career and, you know,
big pop a pump.
Exactly.
One of the worst matches in Boston Garden Fleet Center history against Triple H.
So bad. Yeah, and he got buried in that one, too. We know that. So it just, I don't know. It wasn't as good as it could have been in the WWE. I think they had better success outside the WWF and WWE.
And as we kind of wrap up here, or at least I want to wrap up with this, speaking of tag teams, the Briscoes. If you haven't watched Ring of Honor, they're insane. They had a barn burner in New York on Saturday night. That's just something you should go watch. But I was at the Ring of Honor show on Sunday night, and it was good show. The New York show I mentioned, Briscoes versus the Gorillas of Destiny, Taven versus Lethal versus Kenny King were both excellent. The show in Lowell was good. The Taven Lethal story continues. It's going to be good stuff. Taven's,
ooh, I like that.
Yeah, they threw a little swerve in there that I initially didn't like on the show on Saturday in New York. But I think it's telling a longer-term story between Taven and Lethal. And they're kind of, if you want to make the baseball analogy, they're the Red Sox and the Yankees. They've just been rivals for so long. They're Cena and Orton. They're Cena and Punk. That level of rivalry in Ring of Honor. But they had a good weekend at shows. And I was blessed to have hung out with the crew after the Ring of Honor show in Lowell, and thank you to Andy and Bobby Wong. Of course, we're friends of them up at the Kowloon.
Tiki Bar, check it out.
Yes, the Tiki Bar was hopping, let me tell you. I got there at 11, a little bit before 11, and the place was still packed on Sunday night.
Wow.
But I got to mingle a little bit with the Ring of Honor roster, and the roster for the most part is really close and really enthusiastic. And they're not drawing as well as they should be, but it's not from lack of effort or lack of passion or enthusiasm. So maybe if you've left Ring of Honor because Cody and the Young Bucks are no longer there, maybe give them a chance again. Because I think there's something good. They're still putting on really good matches, and I think that Ring of Honor is worth your time and your investment.
Hey, Jimmy, can I ask you, do you think a guy like Matt Taven, who's a friend of the program, local guy, you know, he's very invested in Ring of Honor, but would they ever, any of these guys ever consider maybe making a jump to the big leagues?
I won't speak for anybody, but I think...
What do you think, though? Kind of impact do you think they could make?
If the price is right, I certainly think that they can make the jump into NXT and then build from there to go into WWE. I don't know necessarily if that's in the cards for anybody right now, but I do think that I think Matt Taven is, and I say this with full bias, his promos are good. He's got the athletic ability of Rob Van Dam in his prime. There's nothing he can't do in the ring. You take a guy like Jay Lethal. Jay Lethal is Ring of Honor's Randy Orton.
Great on the mic.
He's so good on the mic. He's smooth in the ring. People take him for granted. Look, I just had this revelation a few weeks ago. I've taken Randy Orton for granted, and I've missed a lot of his good stuff because he's so smooth. As he said tonight, he's Randy Orton. He can just show up, and I miss that. So those are probably the two biggest stars. Alex Shelley just came back, if you remember him from the TNA.
Oh, yeah.
Motor City Machine Guns, I think they were called.
Yep.
If memory serves. So he's back. He's fighting Taven for the world title in Toronto, August 9th, I think it is.
They're in Toronto, too?
Yes. Of course they are.
Wow.
Of course they are. Because they shadow each other. Of course they are.
I was going to say, to their credit, following the WWE. Hmm.
The Briscoes can go with anybody. Marty Scull and Flip Gordon will be in AEW whenever their contracts expire. I think they expire before the end of the year, so they'll be in AEW. That's
cool.
I don't think I'm breaking news there.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm missing anybody from Kelly Klein. She's got star written all over her.
Oh yeah.
As does Mandy Leon, who, Mike, you and I met a few years ago in Pittsburgh. Pittsfield.
Big fan of Mandy.
I almost said Pittsburgh, but it's Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
The Beautiful People, if you remember Velvet Sky from TNA, I think she's retired. And I think that's probably it from Ring of Honor. I'm probably forgetting a few people, but those are the names that kind of jump out at me.
Yeah. Okay.
Guys, we do this thing on our Over Under 985 podcast, which I'm a part of, which will be getting going just before football season. But we do a segment called Roll the Dice.
Oh, please roll the dice at me. I crush it at Yahtzee. Let's go.
So I'm just going to play a little lightning round quickly. Guys, your thoughts on Charlotte Flair's character right now in WWE? I'll start there.
Mike, go ahead. I'll defer.
Sure. I think that she's finally coming back into the spotlight where, you know, for a little bit she was kind of faded out, not on TV as much, and she has made it clear that she's, you know, she's making that the whole claim that I'm the best in the world and all that, the greatest women's wrestler of all time, using that to her advantage, and I think that's only a matter of time before we see her and Becky Lynch feud, probably after SummerSlam. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if you see Charlotte go after Becky at SummerSlam in the match.
I love spoiled brat Charlotte Flair is my favorite version of Charlotte Flair. Mm-hmm. When she acts like Ric Flair's daughter, there's nothing better as far as her character goes. It has direction, it has purpose. She's the chosen one, and ooh, Becky did it first. She's the one who cheated first. That stuff, that's tremendous because it plays off of being Ric Flair's daughter. Which she, of course, is now, I mean, she's the greatest female wrestler of all time right now as we talk here. And I say that completely objectively. She's main evented a WrestleMania. She's been in top programs. She's drawn tons of money. I'm interested to see who her opponent is, which is going to be better than Ember Moon. I don't think that they would hot shot Ronda Rousey into this. But that seems to be where the speculation goes. Okay. I could see her wedging herself into the Becky Lynch Natalya program.
Yep.
Which makes me wonder if that's going to be the main event because it's Natty Neidhart in her home country. But I don't know anything. I'm speculating off the top of the dome.
All right, I'll throw just a few more at you guys quickly. The name the OC, the new name for the club.
It's a lot catchier than whatever the heck they had before. I didn't even know what they were calling themselves. So I'm sure there's a copyright thing there. I don't know that for a fact, but the club, New Japan stuff, OC, I'm fine with that. But when I thought OC, I'm like, wait a minute, wasn't that a TV show back in like the early 2000s? So I like it. And I know that they still do the too sweet sign like the NWO, but I'm all in on the OC. And I like the logo too. It's nice.
Hate it. Buy Bullet Club from New Japan. Just buy it from them. I know that years ago, New Japan told them to go F themselves, they being WWE. Give them whatever money they want, get all the licensing, call them the Bullet Club. Just do it.
If they can get it, I'm in on that.
I hate the OC thing. I hate the OC.
Maybe Finn Balor gets invited.
So then you call it Balor Club. You've got that one. But I don't think that AJ... So this goes to the question, who's the better performer? Who's drawn more, AJ Styles or Finn Balor?
AJ
Styles.
So you're not going to call those four guys the Balor Club when AJ Styles is the leader, not Finn Balor.
Right.
Can Randy Orton knock off Kofi Kingston, and what will that do for Kofi's run?
Oh, without question, it can definitely knock him off. For Kofi, I think that if he does lose the championship to Randy Orton, then I wouldn't be surprised if you see the New Day lose out on their titles, and then maybe you have Big E get that turn to go singles and just, you know, Kofi and Xavier Woods just be a tag team there on out. But I think that it will still, you know, it's a good run for what he had at WrestleMania. But in the end, though, I think he needs a championship more than Randy Orton needs the win against Kofi Kingston. So Kofi's still, I think he has to be the champion coming out of SummerSlam.
Orton will not beat Kofi Kingston at SummerSlam, even though Kofi from the metrics that we've been describing throughout the show, is the fourth lowest drawing WWE champion in history. I think this is going to be Kofi's defining match since winning the championship, because Randy Orton is so smooth in the ring that if anybody can get a great match and cement Kofi Kingston as the WWE champion, it's Randy Orton.
Final thing for me, guys. If you could take one person out of professional wrestling and turn them independent, who could be hotter than Jon Moxley right now?
Wow. Jimmy, you want to go?
Who could be hotter than Jon Moxley right now if they were turned independent?
So I'll give you mine, and it's Daniel Bryan. And I think that what's behind it is, forget about the neck injury. Forget, you know, he can put all that behind him. He can use the yes movement. He can go against the yes. He can do whatever he wants. He can go out there and fight you. He can come off the top rope. And I just think that that's a guy that could go anywhere, anywhere, independent, and not somebody I'm going to buy a ticket to go see.
I mean, it's totally of the kind where, you know, if CM Punk were here, that would be the guy. Boy. You know what? I'm going to tell you what, this is going to be a little wild card here. The one I can think of right now, because I think he's been squashed and just totally kind of, you know, really fallen off, is Rusev. And the reason I say that with him, he still has that talent in the ring. You know, he's a great in-ring competitor. He's good on the microphone. He's got Lana with him too. So that's a draw right there. It's going to be a package deal. I think he still believes that he has some fight left in him. And from what I'm seeing with Jon Moxley here and totally resurrecting his career, if you will, I could see that with Rusev too. And, you know, you could have him be a deranged guy. You could have him be a babyface. He's got the capability for any of that right there. So a guy that's being underutilized right now, let him break out of his shell. I'll go with him.
Can I say most of the WWE roster?
Well, and I was just going to throw out
Sasha Banks. And that's a cop-out answer because, quite frankly...
It's a fair answer, though.
I guess I don't think of it in... Like, my personal bias says Mike Bennett, but I don't think that he's... I don't think that he would go to that level. So then it becomes, who should be a top guy that... Like Sean Spears and AEW, please. You're not a top guy. I know that you're trying really hard to be a top guy,
trying.
But you're not.
They're trying. I just mentioned Sasha Banks quickly. I think
so. I thought Sasha came to mind, but you know, it's only a matter of time with Sasha. Yeah. And they're playing it up on TV. You know,
right.
So I don't think she's going anywhere. I don't think she was going anywhere because they froze her contract anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So. I'm stalling because I kind of don't have an answer for you, and I hate that.
All right, think about it.
I mean, I'd love to say Finn Balor.
Yeah.
But he's undersized. But his work in New Japan was just so good. So if AEW or Ring of Honor got their hands on him, could he be the next guy?
Could Kenny Omega do it?
Well, Kenny Omega should be the next guy. Right, but they took him out of the title picture to make sure the Jericho and Hangman Page are in it.
Mm-hmm. And he turned down a hefty offer from WWE.
Right, they both did. The Young Bucks did as well.
Yeah,
you can throw it out to your listeners as well. You know, well, I just wanted to poke that out there because you came in hot with Moxley. I think we all agree it's good. But just who else can do it? Like if he can do it, there has to be other guys hungry who think they can too.
Oh, there are plenty of people with the talent to do it. Unfortunately, I don't have that answer for you. And I hate that.
Wow, did I stump Jimmy Stewart on wrestling question?
It's a hypothetical, opinion. And I'm just trying to think
it's an opinion. It's not
No, I hate opinions.
Yeah, like what's the thing with your show that you say you got to come in with a take, right?
You got to come in for a take.
And as we are recording this podcast, we're all watching each other on video, and we're looking at James E. Stewart from the infamous Take Office.
Yeah, Hot Take Central is me.
Look at the desk. There? Yeah, it's all right there. I could see it all. If I can describe it, I mean, I'm not going to describe it to listeners. Imagination.
Oh, I have the answer. Theater of the mind. Go ahead. I have the answer. It's Matt Hardy.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's Matt Hardy. Creative genius, was a producer, has changed his character so many times
He could do different things. He could just be behind the scenes.
Exactly.
Too. Creative, right? You know,
creative changes with the times, tries to stand out. Now, his work isn't what it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But for a big match here or there, if he works a lighter schedule, he can pull it out. He's smart enough to do that. He knows what he's doing in there. So Matt Hardy is my answer. I'm sorry that it took me 25 minutes to give you one, but Matt Hardy is my answer.
I apologize to bring gambling into the wrestling part.
No, it's okay.
Oh,
like,
it's fun.
It adds a little. I mean, there's the whole new big casino Encore, so why not add some more gambling to it? When are they, Joe, do you know when they're going to open up the sports book up there?
No.
Well, Massachusetts got to approve it first. That's the first thing.
New Hampshire last week was approved.
Yeah.
So Rhode Island, New Hampshire. Let's see what Massachusetts is next.
Well, if the right politician can get a paid, never mind.
Yeah.
All right. They're giving me the go home cue.
Good night, ladies.
All right. Each week you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports, including Joe Murray's Over Under 98.5. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. For Mike Riley at Sarge985, for Joe Murray at Joey Murr?
There you go.
JoeyMurr.
Boom.
The show's Twitter account is at WrestleCast985. You can follow me on Twitter at IamJamesStewart. And to quote Colt Cabana, thanks.
Yes. Hello, my broken brigade. 'Tis your great leader, Broken Matt Hardy. And you are currently listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with two wonderful blokes, James Stewart and Mike Riley. Yes. Let me tell you about these men. They dwell and live in the sector of Boston, one of my favorite areas in the states that are united. And James Stewart, we have something else in common. We love the delicacies of the culinary experience known as Kowloon's. Yes, it is an absolutely delightful establishment. And even hundreds of years ago, James, you and I, our essence, knew one another, yes. We were both Vikings on a ship off the coast of Sweden, yes. But enough of these history lessons. Let's get into it and listen to the Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.